Hey guys, how's it going? So if I'm whispering, which I might be, it's because I'm sitting in my living room. It's almost 10 minutes to midnight right now, and I'm just recording the intro for this podcast for you guys. And the reason why I'm recording this at almost midnight is because what's going on at SBL right now is just crazy in terms of workloads. I'm having to just put some really, really long hours in, and you know, the kids are obviously in bed, the wife's in bed, and I'm just up here shedding, and I'm not shedding the base, I'm shedding business, and obviously, you know, making things run as they should do, and making sure that I'm bringing the best to the table for you guys that I possibly can do. So this week is a really special one for me, because in 2008 I went to New York for the first time ever, and my wife and I went over there and really were just kind of like blown away by the whole atmosphere in New York, and really fell in love with the city in a big way. And since then, really, we've gone back many times. For me, I've been back. I went there on my honeymoon with my wife, but for me, I've worked a lot over there as well. Not only as a bass player, but obviously through Scott's Bass Lessons. You know, we've filmed a ton of courses over there, and yeah, it's just a really, I hold it really close to my heart. But in 2008, I can remember standing in a subway station watching a amazing trio, and the bass player was just absolutely tearing it up. He was playing a six-string Federa. I can remember just being pinned to the wall, just thinking, who is this guy? And when we were going over to New York early in this year, we were recording a whole bunch of content for you guys. And Nick, who manages a lot of the content at Scott's Bass Lessons, he was like, oh, I really think we should get this trio in. And the bass player is Moto Fukushima from Japan, who actually lives in New York now. And I didn't at the time, I didn't put two and two together. But when I saw a video of them, I was like, holy crap, it's that band that I saw in the subway back in 2008. So this is 10 years on, which is really cool. 10 years on from me first going to New York, I actually got the entire band in the studio, and we recorded three tracks with the band, and I recorded obviously an interview with Moto. It was really fantastic to sit down and meet him for the first time, and just find out how he, you know, came from Japan and ended up moving to the States, and you know, first to Boston and then to New York, and how his career has developed from there. And he was telling us about what he did and what he thinks he could have changed slightly about his approach in terms of networking and stuff like that. So it's a really interesting interview. So if you are an Academy member, you're obviously going to be able to watch the entire video of this and all of the exclusive performances that the band did as well. If you're not an Academy member, don't worry, you're about to listen to a fantastic interview, and Moto is going to talk about his effects and everything in between, obviously how he got to New York and his experiences in Berklee College of Music and stuff like that. But after you've checked out the interview, go over to Scott's Bass Lessons, check it out, grab your 14-day free trial, because I really want you to check out the full thing with the band, and it really is a really fantastic trio. Anyway, guys, I'm going to sign off now and crack on with the rest of the work that I've got tonight. Hopefully you're having a wicked time out there, wherever you are, in the gym, on the way to work, even at work. I've heard, we were messaged a few, well, actually I hear a lot of people checking out the podcast at work. They say, hey, you know, you're breaking up my work day. But whatever you're doing, hopefully you're having a great day out there. Take it easy, and I'll see you in the shed. Now, on with Moto Fukushima. Let's do this. Hey guys, how's it going? I'm here with Moto Fukushima, who is this epic bass player from New York, who I actually got to see 10 years ago.
Yes.
10 years ago. First time I was in New York. How weird is that? And it was my wife, actually, who saw them on the internet and said, oh, that's that guy that you saw 10 years ago. So, yeah. Dude.
Nice to see you again.
How's it going? Yeah. Been a long time. Yeah, what have you been up to?
No, like, you've got to check Mozart. He's just super, super talented, a real virtuoso when it comes to playing the bass. And he plays in a really fantastic band called House of Waters. And what's the instrumentation? It's drums. And
instrument called hammered dulcimer.
Hammered dulcimer.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and you're on YouTube, haven't you? So they can check you out. Yes, what we'll do, guys, is we'll hook you up with some links so you can check it out. But obviously, in this video, we've been recording the guys today, so you'll be able to check that out as well. But yeah, just, man, it's just such an honor to have you here and be able to. I'm going to pick your brains. I want to know what effects you're using. I want to know about the bass. But first of all,
yeah.
You're in New York, right? So you're not originally from New York. You're from Japan originally?
Yes, I'm from Kobe, Japan.
How did you get here? I don't mean by plane.
Actually, I went to Berklee College of Music.
Was that your first kind of road into it?
It was 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago.
Man.
Yeah, and after finishing the school, moved down to
New York. What was Berklee like? What kind of experience was that? And how old were you when you went there?
I was 20. And it was amazing, like so many great students, I have to say. Now they are very famous, you know, Lionel, Hiromi, Tony Gray.
Yeah.
You know, probably Yannick was there when I entered, you know, the school.
Oh, really? Yes. Yannick Grisdala?
Yes. Yeah. And Panagi Otis, like Now Versus Now.
Yeah.
Everybody gets famous.
Man, and were you into, when you first went to Berklee, were you into improvisational music? Were you like, that's where I want to go?
Or yes, you were, I really want to study the jazz.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I used to have that, like, super long hair and playing rock music.
Me too.
Yeah, right? Everybody does.
You're still doing okay. I've got to tell you, your hair's definitely fared better than mine. Were you into the rock? Yeah, were
yes,
you into rock music?
Yes,
yeah.
Well, you know, slightly shifting, like, yeah, okay, if you listen to Jaco, you know, okay, what's this music? You know, bass sounds amazing, and like, but he's doing like something totally different from like rock music or something. I mean, he has the essence of the rock music, but you know, which kind of opens up, okay, I have to study jazz, okay.
And that was before you got to Berklee?
Yeah, before you.
So what's the vibe when you get to Berklee? What's it like? Or what was it like for you?
Well, it could be different from right now. You know,
yeah,
it's been like 15 years,
yeah,
but it's good. I mean, probably it has the same vibe, you know, great teachers and like lots of sessions, you know.
And who were you particularly studying with at the time?
I studied with Hal Crook,
the trombone player.
And Ed Tomasi, saxophone.
Wow,
yeah.
And what kind of stuff were they getting you to work on?
Oh,
because obviously they're not bass players, are they?
No, but they have amazing stuff, you know, like. It's just improvisation, you know. Concept.
And were you kind of doing standards, and is that where you would say that you started in terms of being able to improvise around chord sequences and that style?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you can do it. I could do it, like, you know, by myself, you know, to study that kind of stuff. But they have a, like, certain method, you know, which way you go, and also they organize pretty nice way. To like very modern advanced stuff.
So. Do you feel like you were taking a down a particular path? They were like, the first thing you're going to study this, and then you're going to do this, and then you're going to do that, right? Yeah. And all the students were kind of working through that pathway together.
Exactly. I mean, it's not the everything, you know. You have so many paths, you know.
Yeah.
But it was, I have to say, that was great study.
Why do you think Hal Crook's so legendary? Because he's like so many people.
Yeah, I mean, so many people, right? Yeah, imagine like his students. I mean, simply and honestly, I think like his approach to jazz improvisation is amazing, you know. I mean, let's say improvisation, like, it's like a white paper, and okay, how we can start it, you know.
Yeah.
But he makes the path, okay, start with this, and the next this, that, here, you know, combine this and this. Or like use this, you know, and very organized, you know.
Really organized.
Very organized.
In terms of the actual methodology he's using, yeah.
Yes.
Like, where does he start you? Where did he start you?
You mean?
In terms of like when he was on this, because he teaches improvisation, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to the school, and what level were you when you got to the school, actually?
Probably like, yeah. Level, I think, like.
You know. Could you play around standards and stuff like that when you go to school?
Very beginning of the school, I had a hard time to play like walking line even.
Okay.
You know,
yeah,
level.
Yeah.
You know. But after 1 year, okay. You know.
And was when you were studying with Hal, was he, was it more of a scalar approach to improvising, like chord tones?
Yes, I mean those basic stuff for sure. But he goes like very specific. Let's say, forget about like a choice of notes, you know, and let's say dynamics.
Yeah.
So you got like this, and like what's your, you play like quiet and super loud, you know, and you can pick just one note and play, like just focus only like dynamics.
Yeah.
Or like articulation, like staccato, or like you play tenuto, everything, you know. So that kind of aspect, like not only for the trombones, like for every instrument, including a drum set.
Oh, really? Know? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you have to think about like dynamics or like articulation, you know, or so many stuff, you know.
Yeah,
so he puts that type of topics in one category. And then like, okay, you have some other elements, you know, okay, you can use this scale, you can use that, but
And it was, but it was all organized and he took you through a very specific pathway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Do people study with you? Obviously, you teach, right?
Yes.
Do you show people, do you take people through a similar pathway or not?
Well, I'm kind of laid back on the teaching. So, but I try to show, okay, you have this way if you want to go type of stuff I try to show, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't force anything. But, you know, at least like, Hal or like Dutmasi or like other teachers, you know, helped me to study like little by little.
Yeah.
So I try to do it same way.
Do the same way. Yeah, because I think sort of like obviously studying with great teachers, like it rubs off on you, right? You end up sort of like learning so much from that process that you absorb that and then you can, you know, you can show it to other people. Yeah. When you moved to New York, did you move straight away after Berkeley?
Well, I stayed one extra year after graduation. I don't remember exactly,
straight down. And like, when you first got to New York, did you know people that were here? Were you?
Not really. Well, even like, that wasn't my plan, you know, to move down to New York, you know. I just wanted to finish Berkeley.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to go back to Japan, but it seems like all of my friends, I'm moving to New York, okay.
Oh, really?
Maybe, maybe something there, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to stay there like 1 year. That was the beginning, you know. And then like it passed like 15 years.
Yeah.
You've never known.
But
I didn't know that many people, so that beginning was very hard to make living with music.
Yeah.
So I had to go back to Boston quite often, you know.
Because you had connections
there. Yes,
there,
I so had a certain connection there, but I didn't have enough connection here, so I did like so many times, you know.
When somebody moves to New York, how long do you think, given like, say, imagine their plane's good, they're a cool guy, they're on time, you know, all that stuff's
yes.
Cool, right? Mm-hmm. When they move to a big city like New York, how long do you think they should give it? How long should they expect to give it?
Mm.
And what's a few tips as well that you would give people when they move to a big city like New York to get into the scene?
Well, I wish I'd known that. And especially like me, I'm very like staying at home and practice type of person. So I don't go to like a jam session.
Yeah.
Or like I don't go like a social networking, you know. I never done that.
Yeah.
And which is down part, I think. I should have done that.
You should have done that, maybe, yes. Like, looking back.
Yeah. But I didn't do it. So, but at least, like, when I get gig or something, you know, I did, like, 120%, you know, work type of stuff. Then, like, one by one, it connected, and now I got known with so many great musicians and friends here. But so that's why it took time for me to build that kind of connection.
To build
here.
The type of connection.
But if you go to, you know, if you are active on the social networking, jam session, whatever, could be, I don't know, 1-2 years.
Yeah. I think it's important for people to understand that, because I've had many friends in the past that have moved to big cities and just maybe not given it enough time and then bounce back to wherever they were from, you know, because they just financially couldn't, yes, you know, couldn't take that kind of situation.
It's not easy.
Have you seen people do that?
Yeah, I've seen that. And even like, okay, you are active at social networking and you're a cool guy, amazing bass player, blah, blah, blah. But still, I'm very sure it takes like 1-2 years, you know,
yeah,
to get
like fully integrated
gigs here. And okay, I mean, New York gigs, okay, what kind of gig you are looking at? You
know? Yeah, yeah, so, yeah.
I don't know.
Like, when did you meet these guys, House of Waters?
10 years ago.
10 years ago,
Yeah, 10 years ago.
Because I think, like, getting in original projects is just such a really advantageous thing to do.
I think so. So I have to say I was lucky to have this project, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
It was huge. If I didn't have this project, probably I'm not here.
Really, do you think you might have gone back to Japan?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Interesting, man. Yeah. I've got to ask you because, like, obviously when you... was it 10 years? Yeah, so I just saw you... like
the very beginning of the group.
I saw, I was there right at the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm an original member.
Yeah. Yes.
But you were playing this bass.
Yes.
You were playing that bass. Like, did you get that bass just when you came out of Berkeley or...?
Yes, after finishing Berkeley, and I moved down here, and I was using like old, do you know the Tune bass from Japan?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I got that like 6-string bass
from
my friend, like $150 or something,
wow,
like when I was like 17.
Yeah.
And I've been using that like 7 years, and it's almost like falling apart in the part, you know. And I asked the company, and like, can I replace the parts? And they said, no, actually, that model, like, we quit, you know. And it was like old 6-string bass, so the spacing or pickup, everything was totally different. And now, like, we have some kind of regulation, right? So you can replace with other stuff, but that bass specifically, like, very hard to find a replacement, you know, that with the parts.
Yeah.
So okay, I probably have to get new one. And, yeah, for the era, sure. that looks good.
Yeah.
So I went to the factory, you know.
Yeah. We were joking before, weren't we, saying, like, at that time when you got that, like, they were kind of, like, they're amazing now, you know, and a lot of people are getting Federas.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, there was kind of this vibe, wasn't it? Like, this was the bass that everybody...
Yes.
I wanted... I think I actually had one. I had a Matt Garrison 5-string at one point. I'm sure it was about 2000.
Sure. Garrison. I mean, definitely, you know, after, you know, seeing his performance, yeah, definitely everybody wants, you know. And also, like, actually for the 6-strings, there were not many choices back then.
Oh, really?
Know? I have to say, like, you know, now it's getting popular and so many companies making very nice 6-string space, I guess. But... yeah.
Back then, there wasn't as many as there is now.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Why did you just love the low B? Is that why you went? And did you, when you were getting this bass, did you consider getting a 5-string with a high C? I ask that because it was very popular at the time. Yannick, Tony.
Yeah, right. But
Garrison.
I've already played a 6-string bass, you know. And the reason was that bass, that Tune bass was cheap.
Yeah.
And so I've been playing.
So you always thought it's going to be a 6-string?
Six string. I think so.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And did you go to the factory and just say, this is what I want? And they were like, okay, show us the money.
Yeah.
What was that? Yeah. Like, did you get it from a shop or did you actually get it custom built?
This one?
Yeah.
Custom, yeah.
Custom?
So, yes, I went there, talked with the guys, you know,
I went this.
I asked like a narrow spacing, but they said nope.
They didn't do it. Did
yeah,
they? Yeah.
And actually, last year I went there again. Like, it's been like 10 years, you know, seeing those guys, and they said, sorry about that, but you know, it's very expensive to make like a specific bridge.
Yeah.
So back then, you know, they didn't have like any narrow spacing.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you guys can see, but that distance there, like from here to here, is like it's real wide. It's like insanely wide, isn't it? Do you ever play down here on the B string?
Yeah, right. Here. Almost same as like acoustic bass.
Yeah, is
player.
That why
yeah.
you do it? Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You bring mm-hmm. the thumb over. Yeah.
Yeah, I try to not use as like actual.
Do you
performance.
Play acoustic bass?
A little bit.
Do you think that's where that came from? That.
Maybe yes, maybe not. I don't remember. But
And when does it, if you play up the board, when does it sneak over and start doing that?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Above the 12th fret, it comes over. Yeah.
I think so.
Mega, man. It sounds incredible. It really does.
Yes.
And obviously, like, when you were playing your band, you were using some of these effects down here. Yeah. Can we get this on camera? Yeah, awesome. Like, what is this then?
This is guitar whammy.
Can I tell my story about the whammy pedal? Can I do it? When I was a kid, Steve Vai, he was using a whammy pedal, and I thought that if I could ever get a whammy pedal, I could just die a happy person, a happy man. Honestly, I did think it was a secret to life. Unfortunately, I never got a whammy pedal. I'm sad, but never mind. Anyway, show the guys what this whammy pedal is, because I think they're awesome.
You know, whammy pedal, probably everyone knows it, but it's pretty good for the bass, you know? You can have up high.
And is that just an octave?
Yeah, just octave. And you can do like other stuff. Oh, by the way, I have this knob. It's called option knob, which you can control with your foot. So.
So what do those do then?
Oh, I mean, you don't need to bend your stuff.
No, what do the different settings do down here?
Oh, yes, it has a different octaves or intervals. This one is a, like, fourth down.
Oh, okay.
So. And, or you can just make it like one, no intervals, so make it high. So this is two octaves higher.
Right, okay, yeah.
So.
Man, that sounds amazing.
It's fine.
And what's this thing here, the M9?
Like
M9. Yeah.
Yes.
Line 6.
Yes.
A friend of mine's got one of these.
Multi-effect, easy. Well, I'm pretty bad at like effects and that kind of stuff. And so multi is easy to carry.
Yeah.
But the main reason...
single stomp boxes,
Main reason I'm using this one is using loop pedals, you know, loop mold. So that's... So you can... That you can do stuff, and you. And you can do. You can.
Oh! So do you have that top part of the unit set up as more of a looper? Is that what you're using it for? Do you ever use effects on it, like octaves and reverbs and things?
Yes,
like
I use reverb and chorus, you know, and delay. This is I did it, showed it a little bit as a
kind of swells in,
type of stuff.
Do you ever use the looper with the band when you're playing? Is that something that you can integrate into what you do?
Well, I'm using loops for House of Waters, but for the like solo moment, not for the. Well, actually, I'm using that. Like, let's say I can make the 1 second layer of the sound, but it's not like a timing with timing. It's just a, like a color of the stuff. You can add it, like let's say. So you can create like some kind of pad of the sound, and if I use and if I make it this high stuff.
So it's that, like it's a soundscape.
Soundscape. And like, you know, Max can play something, or, you know. And once band enters,
cut. Man, that's amazing.
And maybe I can bring it back. These are different stuff.
What did you do there?
Did
you reverse it?
Yeah, reverse. Yeah, half, you know, double it or like make it half speed, you know. Change the tempo.
Yeah. Like a friend of mine said, these are really great for people that are looking for basically like a few different effects units just in one.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Quite easy to handle it, I think. I mean, I can use it, which means very easy to handle.
Yeah, you're really bad.
Yeah, I'm very bad. I have no idea about like effects, you know. Well, I wish I've known, but I don't know.
Before I let you go,
yeah.
Who are you listening to?
Oh, these days.
Yeah.
Any kinds of music?
Any kind of music.
I listen to lots of classical music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always my Arvo Pärto.
Yeah.
It's my favorite. So I always go back there. And on the private, to be honest, I don't listen to music that much.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah,
I go through sort of like stages where I'll.
Yeah. I mean, like, okay, you listen to like certain music, okay, but somehow that relates to your job, you know. But forget about that. And for the private moment, probably I'm listening to silence. Right? Because our job playing it's always music. Sound.
I absolutely understand what you're saying. Yeah. It's interesting. So, where can people find you? You've got a website that people
website,
can go to.
Like houseofwaters.com, Facebook, Instagram, blah, blah, blah. I have my own website, which I haven't updated like past.
I know you don't want to say it. It's like a few months ago.
Yeah. I have my own, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know, those are the main stuff.
People can follow you on there. And what we'll do is, guys, we'll hook you up with the links below and stuff like that. If you listen to this on the website, and if not, if you listen to this on iTunes, go over to the website. You'll be able to find the podcast there and check these guys out. Do you play regularly in New York?
Once a month. And these days we doing lots of tour.
Right, okay. I know you're going over to the UK soon.
Yes.
But where do you play? Have you got a residency in New York then?
Yes, last year, yes, we did at Rockwood Music Hall.
And are you playing there this year? Or?
Yes, we just had one show last week and probably we go back there.
Guys, if you're in New York, go to the website, check them out. Hopefully you'll enjoy the performance in this video. They blew my mind. Moto,
thank you so much
to meet you. Hopefully it won't be 10 years until I see you next time.
I hope we see you soon.
Take it easy, guys. Bye.
Okay, guys. So thanks a lot for checking out that interview with Moto. Huge thanks to Moto and the band for coming hanging out with us in the studio that day in New York. It was a real, real blast. Hanging out with Moto, and especially because I checked him out in 2008 and he just blew my socks off. Again, if you're not an Academy member, make sure you grab your 14-day free trial, because what we've been doing over the past few podcasts is obviously you guys get to listen to the interview, but there's a whole load of other additional content that's going along with the interview, like the exclusive performances that are really... You just can't miss out on them. They make this what it is. So, you know, really go to scottsbassessence.com, check it out, grab your 14-day free trial. And once you've logged in, you can check out the artist profiles that we've been doing, all the other interviews as well. And obviously the huge course library, the huge seminar library. It really is the ultimate online-based school that's bringing a new opportunity to bass players around the world that really want to take their bass playing to the next level. And it's not, you know, like back in the day when I was studying, it was just like, I was talking to a friend about this the other day, thinking about like how much the online experience is speeding up the learning curve. And just, you've got this information that is literally at your fingertips. You can study with the best bass players in the world. You can interact with them in real time from the comfort of your own home. And like for the price of, like, it's less than $1 a day. It's like $25 a month. So it's less than $1 a day. It's completely freaking me out when I think about it. But yeah, so go to scottsbasslessons.com, check out what we're about. And if you want to, just grab that 14-day free trial and I will see you on the inside. Now, take it easy, guys. As always, I'll see you in the shed.